Broadcasting from the Civic Cypher Studios, welcome to the QR Code, where we share perspective, seek understanding, and shape outcomes. The man you are about to hear from is a man who knows how to make a dollar out of 15 cents. Trust me, he is the Q in the QR Code. He goes by the name of Q Ward.
And the man that you just listened to knows that I'll give him 10 of that 15 cent so he can also make a dollar. And when we got $2, we going crazy.
Listen, man,
he's the R in the QR code. He goes by the name Ramses Ja.
Indeed, that's me. Stay tuned. A little later on in the show for entertainment, we're talking about Obama's celebrity guest list being way longer than Trump's. So buckle up, because I'm sure you're going to hear about it on his Twitter fingers, talking about all the celebrity fanfare surrounding the opening of the Obama Presidential Center on the south side of Chicago, especially because it's been widely reported that celebrities want to stay far away from that guy. Most, you know, worthwhile celebrities. So prior to that, we're going to have some dialogue. Recommend a content creator to everyone and explain why. I'm sure Q's got some thoughts there. I definitely do. For Q Words, clap back one time for Marcus Garvey. I feel like I know where you might be going with that, but as always, excited to hear what you got for today. For Better Do Better, LAPD kills black woman's dog while she celebrates. That's a really sad story, and that's why it's in Better Do Better, so stay tuned for that. We're also going to share our opinions. Should debt be a deal breaker for dating? Some new data came out talking about how young people are approaching relationships and how debt factors into that. So, of course, we're going to share our thoughts with these new findings, and we're going to start off talking about what's going on in the culture. President Trump lost the war in Iran, and the case makes itself. You really don't even need us, but of course we are here to give you all the deets so that you can see the truth of the matter. But right now, and as always, we like to start off the show with a feel-good feature, and today's feel-good feature comes from Black Enterprise. The Big Three Basketball League plans to become the first publicly traded professional sports league in U.S. history through a $290 million business combination agreement. The three-on-three league, co-founded by O'Shea Jackson Sr., or Ice Cube, and Jeff Quantinetz, I knew I was going to mess that up, announced on June 12th that it has entered into a definitive merger agreement with Graf Global Group. Graf Global Corp, a publicly traded special purpose acquisition company. After closing, the combined entity will be renamed Big Three Basketball Holdings Incorporated. Management expects to list the company on the New York Stock Exchange, NYSE American, or NASDAQ in the fourth quarter of 2026. The ticker symbol will be TONT, referencing 3-on-3. Key upcoming milestones for the Big Three include securing regulatory approvals for the merger and finalizing the big business combination with Graf Global Corp. The league also plans to expand its franchise model by announcing and selling more city-based teams before the public listing. Effective investor communications and preparation of financial disclosures will be essential before the anticipated public market debut in 2026. This initiative enables fans to purchase shares of the league, becoming part owners and participating directly in its potential growth, a privilege traditionally reserved for institutional investors or billionaires. Shares are expected to be available to the public through major online brokerage platforms once the company is listed. Interested fans can use new or existing brokerage accounts to buy and sell Big Three stock, following standard procedures for publicly traded companies. That is definitely some ebony excellence. Ice Cube had an idea. He took a lot of basketball players that many folks thought were past their prime, put on a good show with these folks. We had a recent guest on, Nancy Lieberman, who was on, and she is one of the coaches in this league. And so the fact that they are growing is fantastic. We love to see it. So, shout out to the Big Three. All right. President Trump lost the war in Iran. This was a wild ride. And to be fair, we had so many things to pay attention to that we didn't give this the in-depth coverage that it deserved because we were focused elsewhere. There's plenty of news outlets covering Iran, and we are taking care of the people whose stories don't get told all that often. But we were very much paying attention to it. We just didn't have as much time in our show as we would have liked to cover this in this way. But as we privately predicted, this ended up being a nightmare for this administration and for the rest of us, for that matter. And our hope, well, my hope was that, you know, Q knows better, but my hope was that, you know, Trump supporters and MAGA folks would have learned the lesson. So we'll share where we are at this point, because we know this can change at any point in time, because Donald Trump says stuff that don't always be true. He rarely says stuff that ends up being true. So, all right, this is from the New York Times. And this was a piece of them reflecting on this. So if you want to get the full scoop, check out the New York Times. But one of the quotes here, the preliminary deal ending President Trump's 4-month war with Iran is welcome, but brings with it hard truths. Mr. Trump made a terrible mistake starting this war. He prosecuted it recklessly and in open defiance of the law. The United States is emerging weaker militarily, diplomatically, and economically, and will pay strategic costs for years to come. Here's another one. Mr. Trump dismissed the views of his aides who told him that Mr. Netanyahu's forecast was farcical. Mr. Trump ignored the Constitution and refused to seek congressional approval for the war. He did not listen to European and Asian allies who opposed this war. Here's another one. He failed to plan for Iran's obvious ability to close the Strait of Hormuz. He made threats about destroying Iranian civilization that succeeded only in diminishing American moral standing. Oof. And then our final one here. For his sins, he has now agreed to a peace framework that the entire world understands is a defeat for him. It is a setback for America, too. Couple things I want to share here. First is a video. It's a video sort of compilation. And what it is Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. And they're establishing a hard line with Iran and then walking it back. So because this is audio, you're going to have to listen, but it's mostly Trump and J.D. Vance. And so you're going to have to listen for their voices. But I'll share it with you now. Here we go.
Time, anywhere, we should be able to call anytime, anywhere. We have to be able to go in and inspect. And if you don't have that, you have nothing, because you know the Iranians are going to cheat.
Any place, anywhere, anytime, U.S. inspectors? That's not part of the deal?
Yeah, that's absolutely something that we are negotiating over.
We're going to destroy their missiles and raise their missile industry to the ground.
You're saying they have 21-22% of their missiles left?
Correct, yes.
It's one thing for the Iranians to say that they're not going to have a nuclear weapon. It's another thing for us to put in place the mechanism to ensure that's not going to happen. Part of that is, of course, to ensure that they don't have the ability to enrich uranium.
They are agreeing never to enrich.
They're agreeing right now to eliminate the enriched stockpile. And if they don't get to a point where they agree to stop enriching, then they don't get the other benefits of the bargain.
And they keep their highly enriched uranium?
No, no. We'll probably destroy it after we get it, but we're not going to let them have it.
You could make the case why you're even bothering, because it's not really valuable. It's, you know, it's probably $500,000 worth. It's not very valuable stuff. But I think psychologically we'll want to get it.
So that is this administration, in their own words, engaging in a non-sanctioned war at the behest of Benjamin Netanyahu. And the whole time, Donald, and even before Donald Trump was president, he's had a target on Barack Obama's back, suggesting that Obama was weak. Indeed, he's in the headlines calling Obama an SOB. Saying that Iranians thought that Obama was an SOB because he gave in to their demands and flew over $1.7 billion or something like that, right? So let's clear a few things up for people that maybe only heard from the president and don't know what's true from what is true, or what isn't true from what is true. So in this deal, in this current deal, Iran will have access to the oil markets immediately, okay? And they're getting a waiver of U.S. sanctions to that effect. And that's something that they haven't had in years, okay? There's going to be a $300 billion fund available to Iran as they go through negotiations, because they have to rebuild a lot of stuff, right? So $300 billion earmarked for Iran. Under Obama's deal, they had the aforementioned $1.7 billion. So anybody that knows anything about math recognizes that $300 billion is a lot more than $1.7 billion. Okay. This current deal allows for the future of enrichment, the enriched uranium that was such a big deal. This current deal allows for the future of the enrichment for civil purposes, but they still get to enrich uranium. It was such a big deal with this administration. Okay. In this deal, they can charge tolls to use the Strait of Hormuz after a 60-day period. That wasn't the case beforehand. So you see how things are worse. They're better for Iran. They're a lot worse than, like, Donald Trump was supposed to make things better. He made them a lot worse. And it cost all of us, not only the past 4 months, but it's going to cost us into the future. Okay. And that's not even it. So the big thing that they're touting is that Iran will never seek to develop or acquire nuclear weapons, right? This is the one thing that this administration is pushing, suggesting that they had this victory. Iran's not going to develop nuclear weapons. We won. But that was in the first paragraph of Obama's agreement. In other words, it was already in place, right? And so for folks that have been suggesting this for such a long time, hey, what is this? What do we stand to gain here other than furthering Benjamin Netanyahu's agenda? I think you have your answer here. Now, regardless of how this administration tries to spin it, this is an L, not just for Trump and this administration, but for all of us. So those are my notes. And I know that we don't really need much more in the way of notes, but I'm certainly excited, as always, to hear your reflections, Q.
Yeah, this is one of those times where I just get to repeat what you said or echo your sentiment, because I couldn't say it any better. We've felt the way we feel today about this the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing changed.
Yeah.
Not only did we not win or not gain anything, everything's worse. It's a worse deal. We're in a worse position. We've lost billions of dollars before the hundreds of billions that are being given to the country, and the strait was open before the war started. So we did not accomplish anything, but Trump got to start something and then say he saved the day. And he knows that works with his base. So here we are again. He starts a fire, puts it out, and then wants a, you know, Nobel Peace Prize for it. It's typical Donald J.
Yeah, he's I don't understand. Well, I guess I'm coming to understand at least how this works, but it really does take a people who are super complicit or a group of people who are super ignorant. And I have not been able to figure out or delineate a segment of the population that doesn't fall into one or of those two categories. Obviously, the people within the administration, it behooves them to lean into the spin, right? You know, they're a part of it. They want their side up. They want 1940s America, 1950s America all over again, right? And this is as close as they've ever gotten to it. You know, in terms of rolling the clock back on this country, Donald Trump has been very effective at really attacking the ideals of what America should be about and really reframing them as American ideas that are almost exclusively for white, Republican-minded males, straight. Well, not even straight, because a lot of those guys actually are somewhere on the sexual spectrum, I'm sure. So, as long as it sounds like Donald Trump is winning, there's a group of people that'll lap it up. And again, you know, if you're a part of this administration, then, you know, these people are not, well, some of them are not smart, but there's a lot of strategic, is the word I want to use, people within this administration that really got this spin thing worked out, at least insofar as their base is concerned. And the fact that the base doesn't revolt is probably a result of those spin doctors. So, moving on to something less heavy. Should debt be a deal breaker for dating? This one is interesting. All right, I'm going to share from Black Enterprise. A 2026 survey suggests that debt may be one of the biggest dating deal breakers for Americans. According to research conducted by a personal finance company, Achieve, in January, 78% of Americans said they would be unwilling to date someone carrying short-term debt, including credit card balances, personal loans, and buy now, pay later obligations. Nearly half of respondents surveyed, or 45%, would be unwilling to date someone carrying more than $25,000 in short-term debt. Meanwhile, 28% said even $10,000 or less in debt would be enough to make them reconsider pursuing a relationship. Only 22% said debt would not affect their dating decisions. Women appear to be slightly more cautious than men when evaluating a partner's debt burden, as 80% viewed debt as a relationship deal breaker compared to 74% of men. Divorce respondents were among the most likely to express concerns about dating someone with significant debt. The research also found that Americans expect financial transparency early in relationships. 72% of respondents said debt should be discussed within the first 6 months of dating, while 85% believe partners should be upfront about their financial situation. In addition, 60% said discovering hidden debt could be grounds for ending a relationship. However, experts note that the amount of debt may be less important than the circumstances behind it. Medical expenses, student loans, and temporary financial setbacks may be viewed differently than credit card debt accumulated through overspending. The findings signal that financial compatibility is a key component for those in the dating market as inflation and the cost of living continue to rise. Investopedia reported that many Americans see debt as a reflection of financial habits, responsibility, and long-term compatibility. So that's the reality of the situation, man. A lot of people are approaching relationships and being as sober-minded as they can possibly be. I think that's a reflection of kind of the struggle that everyone is feeling, the collective pinch that everyone's feeling in their day-to-day lives. So we're going with your thoughts first here, Q.
You know, every decision that we make, you and I specifically, with regards to our show, with regards to the content we create, with regards to decisions that we're making about our family, where we live, what we do, even like conventions that we attend and don't, start with conversations about our fiscal position, our fiscal responsibility, our ability to make money and having money available to spend. And we've had to make some, I don't want to say interesting decisions, because I don't think there are decisions that are different than anyone else would make, but we've had to make decisions that were not based solely on what we wanted to do or even what made sense to do for us collectively.
Sure.
Because of exactly what you just finished talking about. You know, it's kind of frustrating, because I always try to put myself in the position of our listener. Every story leads back to the same thing. And this administration and racism make debt and the financial situation for Black people in this country a really, really interesting place to be. And I think because we don't want our financial hardships to compound, that people almost have to consider the other person's financial situation.
Sure, yeah.
If and when getting into a new relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in our cases, I think what we do for a living, the way that we present and the way that most people that we meet come across us, I don't think it's something they would ever consider, because I don't think you would assume that it would be an issue. But it's kind of something that all of us have to deal with.
Yeah, no matter what. Yeah.
And whether or not it should be a deal breaker is interesting, man, because all deal breakers aren't when you just fell in love with somebody. Like all of your so-called red flags, you ignore them. All of your so-called deal breakers, you ignore them when you just fell in love with someone. So, you know, it depends on where you are in your life. If you're trying to start a family, buy a home, you know, have children, then it's definitely a responsible thing to consider.
Yeah.
But there are so many ways to climb out of the debt hole or the financial struggle that you might be dealing with today. You know, people don't like the idea of dating someone because you see potential in them, but I think that's a brilliant thing to do. If you really believe in somebody and you really care about them, you can be the reason that all that changes. But I think people want a microwave right now thing when they meet someone. And if that's what you're looking for, then yeah, I think I guess you kind of almost have to consider somebody's debt. Deal breaker? I don't know.
Okay. I think that's fair. When I first came across this, I thought to myself, what is a relationship? Like, what should that be, right? And in my mind, And not just in my mind. This is, you know, I've been taught this by some people who are a lot smarter than me at an age that was, you know, earlier than most people get these lessons. But I think that, you know, you grow up and you watch Disney movies and you watch romantic comedies and you start getting interested in, you know, romance and that sort of stuff. And you think, I think your early thoughts are, I would like to be with the person who completes me, my other half, right? It's a very romantic notion, a very beautiful thing to say. It's very poetic. And, you know, the wisdom that I came across was that a relationship is not the forum in which you spend time with a person who completes you. Rather, a relationship should be the forum in which you spend time and share space with a person who themselves is complete when you're complete and you share your completeness with that person, right? In other words, it's simply a forum where you can experience yourself through the eyes of another person and you can enjoy the company of another person. And I think that framing it that way ensured that for me, at least, I never looked at a relationship like, okay, I'm going to have to take on somebody and I'm going to have to be responsible for paying all of this person's bills and making all this person's dreams come true and all that other sort of stuff. And truly in my own situation, I had a very different foundational, path to, you know, adulthood, where I was very much, I belong to my family even now. Ramses belongs to his family, that his sisters and his brother, like that's who Ramses belongs to. And so it was never a real thing where I was going to, you know, take a wife and then dedicate 100% of my resources and bandwidth and finances to this person. And so when you think of it like that, you truly consider, I think, whether or not a person has, they're bringing like value to your life, I think, you know, or they're kind of bringing a burden into your life. And knowing, I think, up front that it is possible for a person to come into your life and you do everything right as you know how to do it for as long as you can. And you help this person with their debt and you make sound financial decisions and you do what everything, you buy a home together, you investigate, whatever that is, and it can still not work out. And then all of that effort is spent on a person who ends up hating you. They don't remember all the things that you did. We just had this conversation the other day, Q. They end up hating you because, or they hate the villainized version of you that they made up for themselves so they can heal from that idea rather than heal from the reality of the situation, which causes them to take accountability for their role in things not working out. It's just a lot to consider, you know, and I think that traditionally speaking for men, when you, again, if you're a traditional minded man, you might approach, if you're being sober minded again, you might approach a relationship like, hey, this is a big responsibility. I want to make sure that I can actually pull this off. Have I accomplished all the goals? Do I make enough money? Have I achieved the raises? Have I, you know, become the man that I want to be? And then when it comes to like, okay, this woman is coming and then she's going to put me back 10 years because she's got all this debt and she didn't finish school. She did, you know, whatever, you know, it might cause you to pause a little bit and say, hey, we should probably take this slowly because once we get married, our debt is commingled and I'm responsible for that. So, you know, it's fair to consider it, I guess. So, all right, let's move it on. LAPD kills black woman's dog while she celebrates. Okay, this one is a sad story. You know, full disclosure, I'm not the biggest dog fan in the world. I like dogs just fine, but I got bit by a dog when I was little. I never really got to be like warm fuzzies with dogs after that. Everybody that has dogs, God bless you. They bring you joy and provide comfort and company and all that sort of stuff. But I'm saying this to say that I'm not especially like a dog lover, and that's why the story's here. I'm very upset with the police in general. You know, there's a few stories that we just didn't have time to get to. I wish you guys could see our our like group chats and our pre-production meetings and whatnot, all the stuff that we have to leave on the cutting room floor. But this one stood out to me because I saw the video and I saw how heartbroken this woman was. And it's that heartbreak and my capacity for empathy that compelled me to ask if we could have this in today's show. So I'll paint the picture for you. This from the BIN. Marie Marcel was having the best night of her life. 10 minutes later, she was on the floor holding her dying dog. Marcel, a 45-year-old nurse and lifelong Knicks fan from Rockland County, New York, who's currently living in Los Angeles, was celebrating the team's first NBA championship in 53 years when a neighbor, mistaking her screams of joy for a sign of distress, called 911 to report a woman in danger. Police showed up to a celebration, not a crisis. Excuse me. According to NBC News, when officers knocked, Marcel's 2-year-old golden retriever, St. Bernard and poodle mix, Jameson, slipped past her legs and ran outside. Within seconds, she watched him get shot twice. He died moments later. Jameson had just spent the night wearing his own Knicks jersey for the occasion. You can see in the video, the dog is wearing the Knicks jersey and the lady's on the ground hugging the dog. And she's like wailing. Quote, I just don't understand. I don't understand it. I don't get it. Unquote, Marcel said through tears per the outlet. Quote, he wasn't doing anything. He didn't do anything. I know he didn't. I know he didn't. End quote. The Los Angeles Police Department said in a statement that officers asked Marcel to secure the dog after he was seen barking at them, and that when he later exited the apartment unattended, he charged at one of the officers, prompting the shooting. Marcel disputes that account entirely. Quote, Jameson wasn't baring teeth. End quote, she told Fox 11. Goes on to say, quote, he wasn't growling, he wasn't aggressive, he wasn't barking, he was just moving toward the officer, unquote. Video of the aftermath shows Marcel on the ground wailing over Jameson's body as roughly half a dozen cops stood by. As a person who was never really a big fan of dogs, I had to learn what dogs mean to people. I had to learn what dogs mean to people who live alone. I had to learn that when people get separated from their dogs, people that are experiencing homelessness and they can't take their dog with them, that sometimes they refuse help if it means that they can't take their dog. It's like their child or the other half of themselves. Some people, it's their only friend. Sometimes for people, the only time they hear the sound of their own voice is when they talk to their dog or their cat, right? And again, I am a human being with a beating heart in my chest, so I feel that. And then when I saw this video of this lady on the ground, I'm not, again, not predisposed to liking dogs. It's just heartbreaking. And one of the things I've said frequently on this show, after having been around the world, I know that not all police departments across the planet carry guns everywhere they go. And if you don't have a gun on your body, then it's less likely that you're going to make mistakes like this. The officer clearly was afraid, or maybe not, but this is the excuse that we always get. Okay. They took a life, which often enough it's black males, and the officer somehow is justified in doing so. They didn't take a second to stop. This officer probably was trained just fine. Training doesn't help. We've covered that many times. Having that gun on your person means that you're likely to use it, more likely to use it than if you, say, had it in the trunk of your car. Are there bad guys with guns? Sure. Are there bad guys with guns at every single police stop that you go to? No, it's very much a minority of those stops that you go to. And the police, somehow their lives are worth more than the lives of everybody else, and they're always justified in how they deploy their weapons. And the LAPD has been problematic since I was a baby, since before I was a baby, sorry. And this heartbreaking story doesn't do anything to help anyone. And from where I sit, the LAPD and every police department better do better. Stay tuned. We'll be back more after this.